That, of course, the great Bill Morrissey, leading into our next guest, who knew Bill very well. He is one of the best comedians in the business, a legendary comedian and a tremendous advocate for victims of child abuse and child pornography. Barry Crimmins joining us this afternoon. Barry, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rich. How
and are you? Like great people, born on July 3rd, same day as me.
Always have to be a step ahead of this country.
Yeah. There's no question about it. Well, on that note, let's begin with your observations.
Yeah, a tremendous Flag Day.
Yeah, well, and the,
there weren't enough nationalistic holidays coming up. You know?
Yeah, the day before was no prize either. What were your impressions of the non-testimony of Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions?
Jeff secessionist. you know, I think that, you know, I thought we were trying to get, you know, tributes to the Confederacy out of the public square, but there he was, yapping. So, yeah, well, you guys are in Maine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, people are still mostly on the right side as regards the Civil War there.
Yes.
Well, yeah, you never know. The longer time goes on, you begin to wonder.
We do, Barry, sometimes see the stars and bars on somebody's car around here, but
yeah,
I think...
Yeah, I know. The American swastika. Yes. Yeah, we have a lot of that in upstate New York, too. It's very displaying. I mean, New York lost the second most soldiers in the Civil War to Ohio, and I see the Confederate flag here. I had one, but it was on a doormat. I wish I bought, like, four of them. I've been looking for more ever since, but... Yeah, it was a very popular item at my house once everyone caught on to why it was there. Wore out pretty quickly.
Well, as you pointed out, maybe we just didn't leave the federal troops south of the Mason-Dixon long enough. Another 100 years
yeah,
would have
well,
helped.
You know, it's funny. My friend Mike Donovan, who's a great historian, is also a comic, and he always points out that we hear a lot more about the horrors of Reconstruction than we do about the horrors of slavery.
Absolutely. You know?
What was more bizarre to you, Barry, a Sessions testimony or that cabinet meeting we witnessed 2 days ago?
That was, wow, that was just, you know, that was like, I don't get to go to that many, you know, roasts of Mafia Dons. So, you know, that was, the closest I guess I'll ever get. And I, too, feel done. I mean, it just wasn't, you know, the day of the wedding of your daughter. But, that's just, it's down to that. And he's playing to the base, and there's never been as base a base as there is at this point.
Well, you've been on the road lately, and part of that is because I know you're still doing some stuff with the documentary.
Well, I'm not really.
No. Okay.
You know, I mean, we're still talking about it. It's still just judging by my email and so on. A lot of people still see it on Netflix. Bob made a fine movie. But mostly, I'm just touring and doing a lot of dates. I'm getting ready to do my new show, which is called Atlas's Knees. And I'll premiere that for those of you who are going to be in Lawrence, Kansas. On June 30th. By the way, another great bastion of the Union. I'll be there at the Free State Festival to debut that show, which is basically about, a big part of it is the 23 years I put in sort of answering and trying to help every trauma victim who came to me as much as I could. And the problem was that after a long time, it just seemed like I was getting pulled back into the pit I was trying to pull everybody out of. And it sort of had to do with how insidious self-loathing is. Mine manifested itself in me feeling that I was eligible to heal from having survived very violent rapes as a very young boy. And I deserve to heal, but only after every single other person in the world was healed first.
Yeah.
And that's how the self-loathing pulled it off on me. And so I think I you know, I'm not going to let the self-loathing kick in again and beat myself up for trying to help as many people as I could. I just had to draw a line. I get to have some life for myself, but I also get a chance to sort of express some of the conclusions I've drawn from 23 years of a remarkable volume of anecdotal information about what happens to people who suffer almost every stripe of trauma you can imagine, from war veterans to, battered women to sexually, physically, and emotionally abused children to, you know, you name it.
The documentary, Bob Goldthwait said, remarkable documentary, Call Me Lucky, is so good and so powerful. And watching it again, I was struck by your testimony before Congress and then the comments of the law enforcement people in Ohio that they didn't even understand the things you were talking about in these AOL chat rooms and what was going on. And Congress had no idea.
No, they were bragging about how computer illiterate they were. Well, maybe you could bring in some computer literate people with you, so we could. But at that time, very few people were up to speed with what a dangerous thing it was for these particular workers to seize the means of production. You know, when it came to child pornography. And at the time, I said, if you find people that are collecting this stuff, that are trading in it, you're going to find people who are actively abusing children as well. And case after case of active abuse of children is made when the authorities first become aware of these people. I try not to talk like a cop. I could have said individuals. But people who trade this thing, because, you know, they go and they check their computer, and next thing you know, some of the kids in the photos are kids from down the street, or the Little League team they coach are their own children. And so that has been a really interesting thing, and I really had a remarkable and overwhelming and scary thing happen a couple weeks ago. I'm playing Boston. And after the show, this guy who had been a Boston comedian, who had kind of disappeared, he never really was much. You know, he might have been an opening act for a while, but he had disappeared. I saw him briefly before the show. Said, "Yeah, I've been gone. I've been out of town. I was in the middle of the country. I was in Ohio," and, you know, me being literal, I had to bite my tongue and go, "Well, that's not exactly the middle of the country." Anyway, after the show, he compliments me on the show, but the show was this new show, and it's emotionally draining to do it, to talk about the ramifications of that abuse has had on my entire life and some of the time I've lost and the price I've paid by just, you know, having the courage of compassion and listening to people and listening to all these terrible things that happen to people and have happened to people and are continuing to happen to people because they haven't dealt with what they needed to deal with. So I'm pretty exposed. But the show goes well, and I have to kind of get through the crowd and I get some photos and whatever, and I deal with some people. Then I kind of duck over and just want to sit down and there's a seat at the bar. There's a few seats at the corner of the bar, and this guy is sitting at the corner of the bar. And he goes, "Oh, this is a really good show." "Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about something." I go, "Well, shoot, what do you got to say?" And he said, "Well, I was in Ohio because, not because I wanted to go to Ohio, but because I was in prison for child pornography."
Whoa.
And what it came down to is, like many perpetrators, he saw the compassion and the kindness that I have and I show as a weakness that could be exploited. I don't know what he thought. You know, he thinks he's going to get back into comedy. And, you know, he's a registered sex offender. But he said that's all behind him. And And then he said, oh, my marriage broke up, and boo-hoo, and poor me, and whatever. And there just isn't a bigger, you know, these people who are forever sort of making fun of victims, disclose real people, victims of terrible things, having the courage to disclose what's happened to them, to sort of regain not only control of their lives, but to help others and to make people understand that these problems are prevalent and they touch people we know and love, whether we know it or not. But anyway, this guy, you know, he says it's all behind me. And I, you know, and I just didn't say much. And he went on kind of looking for, you know, I know he's looking for, I guess, sympathy. I don't know if he wanted some sort of cheap thrill. He wanted me. He said he never would have done it if there weren't an internet. And then he complained about not being allowed to be on the internet. And then finally I said to him, well, you understand I'm quite literate in this problem and in the crimes you've committed. And you understand that the recidivism rate is ridiculous. And then I just said, I just really can't talk to you anymore. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. And I got up and I walked away. And before I got five steps away from him and I started talking to a couple of other people I knew and glanced over my shoulder, he was gone. He evaporated because he didn't want, you know, he didn't want to be around after giving me that information. But I wouldn't have said anything. I didn't want to get anybody. I didn't want to say something to the people that come to my shows. There might be somebody there that would just immediately physically go after the guy, and that would just make him a martyr. You know,
right.
You know, so I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play along with that. But if I had a chance to talk to him, and it's now going to be the end of the show, I'll tell him that the abuse I suffered is behind me, too. It's just that once in a while it stabs me in the back.
Yeah.
It's just that once in a while what was a big, open, gaping wound healed into a large scar that is full of scar tissue. Sometimes I turn wrong and it really hurts. And that's the case with so many people, and they never, you know, and they are all, you know, unregistered sex offendees. You know, they have had their lives skewed, they have had their social contracts shattered because you, people like you, have at the very least demanded that children be harmed so that you could, for your prurient interest. And so, you know, I have no sympathy for you. And if you think you're going to stand in the line of people that I had to shut up because there's just so many people who are hurting so much that I just can't deal with everybody that comes to me, if you think I'm going to let you get in the same line with those dear souls, you're crazy, pal. You're crazy, because that isn't going to happen. You deserve to be the pariah that you are. You did what you did. He said, oh, I only did it for 3 or 4 years. Oh, wow. Yes. Well, I did that study. It wasn't quite a year that I did that. You know, I did that expose that I did. I knew I was going to publish something somewhere. I didn't know it would be the Congressional Record, but I did. But once it was done, and once I knew the authorities knew what was what, I never wanted to see or child pornography again. I never wanted to see photos of little kids, of a little kid with curly red hair getting raped by a guy, a big man with curly red hair who looks just like the kid, and I see the kid's eyes, and I see the humanity draining out of them. I know that some of the kids I saw in those photos aren't alive today because of the abuse that they suffered. I don't know which ones. I just know that I would be a fool and in total denial to have seen as much stuff as I saw and not know that some of those kids didn't make it. In the meantime, this guy can still wander around and tell me, you know, what a tough situation he's in, and boy, the internet did it to him, and so on and so forth. So, you know, as compassionate as I am, anyone who thinks it's a sign of weakness or cowardice doesn't understand the true nature of compassion and care and the true desire to improve things so that no other kid grows up crazy enough to commit the kind of crimes that guy did.
Barry, as behind as law enforcement was back in the 90s, do you think they're doing a better job now of keeping up with the technology and...
Well, and, I think, but, you know, I mean, you know, I think, but again, you know, I did my year.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the undernet or the dark net or whatever. I don't know about any of that. I just don't know about it. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to be near it. It's another, you know, I mean, everybody said to me at the time, well, are you okay to do this? You know, are you okay to do this? And my answer always was, I wouldn't have been okay if I didn't do it. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to see that stuff. I didn't want to know about that stuff, but there it was. And I couldn't know about it and turn my back and walk away from it, because I would rather have everybody think I was Chicken Little and a nut than be guaranteed of my own self-loathing, which is what would have happened if I just said, oh, I don't know anything about it. I'm getting out of here. I don't know what they're up to. It was like opening up a door and seeing hundreds of kids get raped. Now, this was even before video, so, digital video. Right. I mean, it was just an idea at the time, and I didn't have the ability to look at it then. Just the photos were brutal back then. So, I mean, it's grown. It's worse. They have ways around it, and I'm sure they have to stay ahead of it. But one of the good things is that the cops who were involved in those first busts, they were called Operation Innocent Images, got a lot of good press. So some of the same cops who I was trying to talk to at the time, and who were, I knew some of the cops that were working in it, and they would say, oh, you're still working at that homosexual slur, child abuse stuff? They would literally say that to cops. Why aren't you out doing real cop stuff? Well, if we're going to have cops, if they're not there to protect children, then there's no use for them as far as I'm concerned. But they caught on that this is something that the public responds to, that the public doesn't want, and they look good when they pull into the cul-de-sac and take some of these bastards away in handcuffs who are consuming the pain of children for their own prurient interests. So there's a lot more cops in on it now. Almost every cop would be in on it. Of course, there's plenty of cops that are child abusers. So, I wouldn't venture a guess. I just know about plenty of cases where, cops are involved too. So, I mean, they have to kind of police themselves too. But that said, they're much more interested. And here's the other thing. When I was doing it, these child pornography traffickers literally didn't think anybody could come after them. They were mostly Americans, as America Online, and they were literally talking about their First Amendment rights, literally. And as Andrew Vox, the author, says, you can mug somebody and call it performance art, but it doesn't mean you're going to get away with it.
We're talking to Barry Crimmins here on Dance. Barry, before we let you go, with all you've endured and with the people that you have dealt with and tried to help along the way, and with the ugliness that we see in our politics and beyond, where do you find beauty in the world?
I'm looking at my garden right now. I got my dogs. I see beauty in the hope of people. I see beauty in the courage and kindness and the bravery of compassion. And I take a lot of strength from, we win sometimes. We do win sometimes. And also, I'm just sort of, fortunately, I kind of took John Lennon to heart a long time ago, and I don't believe in presidents, that much. I'm in charge of my own life. And, I think people that are really upset about Donald Trump would be well served to take a look around and figure out somebody who's obviously a lot more screwed over by the circumstances that we're in, and do something and take a stand for those people. And when they do that, and when they act that way, they're not going to be looking around for who's going to lead us out. We need a leader. I don't need a leader. I'm not on a field trip. I'm not a moron. I'm a grown man. I vote with my feet every day. I vote at the polls every 2 years, but I vote with my feet every day. And the action that I take when my feet lead me to look into the mirror and I see somebody there who's behaved in good conscience, who's spoken up for the people that screwed over, the oppressed, the raped, the heartbroken, and taken a stand for those people and done what was right, then I'm going to be looking at a leader in the mirror. And when we do that, we're going to have a nation full of leaders. And when the politicians catch on that the people have caught on and can can lead themselves. They're going to hop on the bandwagon with a steering wheel and say they're driving it.
Barry, this is Bruce. Thanks so very much for giving us so much time and coming on. And best of luck with the new show. And hopefully I'll get to see you before too long.
Yeah, absolutely. You're a phenomenal author. And everybody that has you as a teacher is very fortunate, Bruce. And you're a great man. And it's good to see you. And God bless our friend Bill Morrissey.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Barry.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye.
That's Barry Crimmins here on Downtown.